The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Wildlife populations around the world are facing dramatic declines, according to figures that have prompted environmental campaigners to call for urgent action to rescue the natural world. However, not all populations are in decline, and rewilding projects have seen the return of some endangered species. Just recently, or for the first time in 6,000 years, a bison was born in the wild in the United Kingdom. But there's more to that tale than meets the eye. Joining me now is Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this is a Living Planet Index. Explain what it is.
Yeah, so this is a report that came out about a month ago, and it comes from the World Wildlife Fund. And for many years, they've been monitoring the size of different populations of different species. And for this one, they're looking at vertebrates, so mammals, birds, amphibians and reptiles. And they have looked at data for about 32,000 populations across over 5,000 species. And people may remember, because it was in the news about 4 weeks ago, the headline figure from the report was that populations have declined by nearly 70% in the last decade. Since 1970, not in the last decade, with some populations in South America declining as much as 94%. So these were stark, dramatic figures. And that was kind of what captured the headlines. But I thought it was worth looking behind the figures a little bit, because it can be a bit hopeless when you hear those kind of figures. And I think we need to break them down a bit.
Generally, I presume human activity is the heart of these declines.
It is. It's habitat loss, degradation of the places where these animals live, over exploitation, hunting, fishing, all of those things. Exactly. But when you think about the data, of course, what it means is it's the amount of the population that's declined. So if you have a very small, rare population of 100 manatees and it goes down to 30 manatees,
you're heading for extinction.
And it's a 70% drop. But those small species do skew the figures somewhat, because that's a massive drop. But, you know, we've lost 70 very important animals.
Yeah.
Not to take away at all from the seriousness.
But if, for example, you lost 10% of the mackerel population in the North Atlantic,
yeah,
that mightn't make that much difference.
It may not. And I think that's why we need to think about these figures really in depth, rather than just panicking and feeling we can do nothing. I mean, in Europe and the USA, we lost about 20% of our species in the same time. Now, that's because we'd lost a lot of them previously. So it's a bit like the climate issue. A lot of the damage is historical in those areas, whereas, you know, other parts of the world are catching up. And we need to think about how we're going to support those parts of the planet to retain this biodiversity.
Let's talk then about those populations that are stable and maybe some even improving.
Yeah, and we do. About half of the populations that were looked at are stable or improving. So again, you know, while we have to be really clear about the seriousness, it's not all bad. And I think we've talked a couple of times about projects that we have seen improvements when nature has been left alone or supports and funding have been put in place to allow populations to recover. And that's kind of the other, some good news that we heard,
yeah,
is about these rewilding projects.
Now, probably the most famous one is at Yellowstone Park, with, yeah, the wolves coming back, and how that caused the deer to move more quickly, not to linger. That improved the rivers. Then the beavers were back, and so
exactly
on. It was a knock-on effect. Brilliant, brilliant story. Is there a case for doing something like that in this country?
Well, I mean, we did. We tried with the golden eagle. We have populations back in Donegal, having gone extinct many years ago. But we are seeing more ambition here. I mean, sometimes environmentalists don't like this, because, you know, you're moving animals into new places where they aren't currently naturally there. So it's been controversial. But I think with the scale of the issue facing us now, we are seeing people doing it. And as you said, they have introduced bison back into the UK. And of course, the twist in that tale is some of the bison came from Fota Wildlife Park, three of them that were brought over to Kent.
And the baby bison that was born actually could play for Ireland.
It was conceived here, Pat, you're right. So there was a surprise visitor that went over to Kent. So the first wild bison that was born in the UK in many, many years was conceived here.
Now, what else are they doing around Europe?
So there's an organisation called Rewilding Europe, and they've done a number of big projects. Their most recent one is looking at Spain. they're introducing, it's a bit like the Yellowstone example, into a sort of place around the highlands east of Madrid. They're introducing black vultures, lynx and wild horses. And again, it's the idea, like Yellowstone, reintroduce a whole ecosystem that can function together. So they're going to do this in stages. It's a very low population area. A lot of people have moved to the cities.
And I think 2.1 million acres.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And I think we should be ambitious. I think we should think about this in Ireland. We've seen the Atlantic rainforest in the Barra Peninsula, you know, that this idea that we can take spaces and just let them go back to nature and the huge benefits that can come from that. So rather than being, you know, really sort of hopeless from these figures, I think we need to think about how we support places like the Global South to keep their biodiversity and how we think about bringing it back.
It's interesting, things like vultures, bringing vultures back or increasing their populations, because they're an important part of the whole ecosystem as well.
Absolutely.
Now, you want to talk to me about the aye-aye, and I've never heard of the aye-aye. What is it?
Well, an aye-aye is a lemur that lives in Madagascar. So not a monkey and not an ape. It's a lemur, which is a prosimian. It's a little nocturnal animal with big eyes and big ears. And one of the most unusual things about it is it has these incredibly long fingers. It's really worth looking at. Its hand is about 40% of its arm length, and it has an incredibly elongated, skinny third finger, which it uses to tap, tap, tap on wood in the night. And then it listens for sounds of grubs, and it uses its finger to stick it into the log, pull out the grubs and eat them. And it's a little elusive creature, just one of those sort of amazing creatures that we study.
I mean, it's not very big. It's from
it's
top
about 40
to tail.
Centimeters, the size of a big cat, exactly. And it's a nocturnal animal. And about 2 years ago, researchers discovered that it actually had a sixth finger, which is very unusual, a little thumb to help it grip while it's using this other finger to tap.
But they'd only thought it had five.
They only
and
thought
then
it had five.
A sixth
there's
digit.
A sixth little thumb hidden in there, which even has its own fingerprint. But last week, another bit of research about the aye-aye. So researchers were looking at the aye-aye and they found it has another use for this incredibly long middle finger. And I'm afraid, Pat, it's picking its nose. It's probably the world's best nose picker. It can get this finger, which is about 8 centimetres long, right into its nose. And the researchers use CT scans to see the finger goes up, 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 back, 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 and all the way to the back of the throat. And then whatever comes out on the finger is licked afterwards.
You'd imagine they just swallowed it in the first place. But they actually dig it out, going through the nose, down to the throat, take whatever's there, and then swallow it, you know, lick it and swallow it.
Yeah, and I don't think researchers have ever thought this about humans picking their nose, but they think there could be an evolutionary reason here, maybe coating their teeth with some of the mucus to stop them getting infected with bacteria, which obviously wouldn't be exposed at the front of the mouth as it runs down the back of the throat. So research will no doubt continue, but I think the eye, it's worth remembering when we talk about biodiversity loss, about all these amazing species that are out there, and we would so love them to
so
be there.
So they know
for
what it does, they don't know why, but the answer might be about, like, the same as the dog and the testicles, because they can.
Well, the other thing is bright species. So ourselves, capuchin monkeys, these are the most biggest brain ratio for lemurs. So maybe you need to be smart to pick your nose. Dexterous anyway.
Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. Thank you very much for joining us. Every day is a school day. There's no doubt.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.